Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with me today. My website is www.jbsba.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. I'm excited about having Richard DeKayser back on the show. Richard is Senior Vice President and Chief Economist with National City Bank. He's one of the top bankers in our brain trust, and he's our good friend. Richard, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Richard. One of the things that I noticed in the Wall Street Journal recently, they published their stack ranking of how the economy's doing by polling a number of economists, I don't know, probably 30 or so economists, and maybe 40. And I noticed that you were in there again. Congratulations. And you weren't quite as I don't think you were as high on they rank them the most Pollyannas. The Pollyannas are way on the top, and then the bears are at the bottom. And you're usually closer to the top than you were, I think, this time.
Well, yeah, I'm not congenitally optimistic, just when circumstances dictate. A year ago, you're quite right, I was at the very top of the list. But as events actually turned out, my predictions for 2003, if anything, were on the low side. The economy surprised most people on the upside. And I'm pleased to have been found at the top of that list. And now I'm, frankly, feeling very consensus-ish. Not that I am more pessimistic on the economy. Actually, I think 2004 will be better than 2003, but I think the basic view that has become embraced by the community of macroeconomic forecasters is pretty much consistent with my own, so I'm more in the middle of the pack.
Well, how are we doing right now? What do you think about the economy as we stand right now?
Well, the economy is doing pretty well. On a year-over-year basis, GDP growth in last year was 4.2%. Now, to put that in perspective, normal is considered somewhere around 3.5%, so we did better than would be considered the economy's normal pace. It has been influenced by a number of transitory factors. Consumer spending has been very strong as people have been refinancing mortgages and enjoying the benefits of tax reductions over the past 3 years. And that's not likely to be as prominent in the outlook going forward. Nonetheless, I think the economy will continue to do even better. Because we're going to see someone else come to the fore. Instead of consumers leading the pack, they'll continue to play a supporting role but not lead the pack. But that lead position will shift, in my opinion, to business investment.
And that's good news, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. Business investment had been languishing since the second half of 2000 through the middle of last year. And it's been on a clear uptick, and there's a bunch of reasons. We've got less excess capacity. Market interest rates are still low. They're very generous. Tax subsidies, lenders are getting more free with extending credit to prospective borrowers.
That's good news for small business.
Well, it is. The Federal Reserve does a survey every 3 months. They call it the Senior Loan Officer Survey. They call up banks and they say, are you tightening your credit conditions or are you easing them? And they were tightening from 2000 through almost the end of 2003, but that's over. Credit conditions are now in a loosening mode, and that is good for small businesses because it means not only money cheap, and it is, to be sure, but it is also increasingly available.
Yeah. Well, that's good news for the expansion, but I know that the Fed will keep a close eye on that. They need some good news, don't they, Richard, so that they can sort of put a little ammunition back into their weapon, which is the Fed funds rate. They'd like to yep. one of their prime weapons, I should say. They'd like to be able to reload a little bit, and they need some good news in the economy so they can raise rates at least a couple of times without hurting the economy's momentum.
Well, that's right, and I'll tell you that they want to see growth strong and stronger than its long term average. That is to say, much well above the 3.5% trend I mentioned. And more importantly is they want to see inflation firming.
Right.
Core inflation, which is just inflation excluding volatile pieces like food and energy, has been trending downward for the past 2 years, and year over year in 2003 increased just 1.1%. Now, the Fed's nemesis, of course, is deflation, or as they like to call it, a further unwelcome fall in inflation. So at 1%, that's getting close to the red line.
It's getting dangerous. Yeah.
It is. Now I think that we're likely to see that firming in pricing pressures, however, this year. In particular, the dollar has fallen a bunch, almost 20% on a trade-weighted basis.
Right.
Import prices are no longer falling, they're rising. This tells me that one of the big factors which kept inflation under control is now going in the other way, and I think they'll be starting to bump up rates as the year unfolds.
I predicted one time this year, and I predicted they'd do it in June. Stand by, Richard. I'm going to get your thoughts on that, and I've got some other predictions. I want to get Richard to tell me if he thinks I was how crazy I was when I made these. 22. We'll be right back with Richard DeCaser. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we've got Russell Brown is going to join us. He's going to talk to us about some more of the business buying and selling issues that you need to be paying attention to in the buying and selling jungle of businesses. He's got some things that he wants to help us with. And also, we're going to talk to Dolph DeRoos, who's a real estate expert. He's going to talk to us about whether it's better to rent or to own your small business real estate. And we're going to talk about that. As you probably won't be surprised to learn, I have some thoughts on that as well. Richard DeCaser is our guest and our good friend, and he's the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for National City Bank. Richard, tell us a little bit about National City.
Well, National City Bank's a major regional banking company. We extend from western Pennsylvania to Michigan, going from east to west, and to Illinois, east to west, and from Michigan to Kentucky, going north, south. But we also have credit card and mortgage operations that are nationwide, over 1,000 branches, over 2,000 ATMs, and huge in the small business lending business. I think we're the number one SBA lender in four of the six states that we operate in.
And give us the website, please.
It's easy, www.nationalcity.com.
I want to talk about some predictions that I made and get your thoughts on them. I predicted that at the end of the year that we would see something that was rare, if not unprecedented. And I predicted that both the annual economic growth rate and the unemployment rate by December 31st, 2004, would both be over 5%.
Yeah, I don't think that's at all unreasonable, Jim. I'll tell you, the consensus, I think, is for GDP growth in 2004 to be somewhere around 4.5%. I'm a little bit north of that at 4.8, so I'm close to your 5 figure.
Yeah.
And certainly 5% would not be ridiculous. It's well within the realm of reasonable forecasting. And the unemployment rate today, it's at 5.6%, at least for the month of January. We should see that decline, but I don't think it'll decline fast enough to get under 5%. So 5 and 5 sounds like maybe a tad bit optimistic, but certainly, as I've indicated, not from the lunatic fringe by any means.
I appreciate that vote of confidence, but you know, one of the reasons why I still feel that the unemployment rate is going to be high. Higher than 5%, 5% or higher, Richard, is because we've got, you know, you talk about, and you're going to talk in a minute about cyclical deficits and structural deficits, but I think we have cyclical unemployment and structural unemployment. I think that we have that in unemployment as well, in our employment situation as well. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Economists are always trying to figure out what is full employment. In other words, how many people ought to be employed to represent nothing more than the inherent difficulty of people losing their jobs as the nature of the changing economy we live in. And the rule of thumb now is that that's around 5. I think it's a little bit north of 5, but say somewhere between 5 and 5.25%.
You would consider that to be full employment?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's a little higher. That's a little higher than we used to think it needed to be, somewhere around 4%, didn't we?
No. Actually, I'll give you the history there. When the 1990s began, the rule of thumb was 6%, and this is not my own view, but generally the consensus at the time. And we plowed through that, going down to 5 and eventually 4% by 1999. But very few people would argue, I think, that 4% is sustainable. Just as today we have cyclically high unemployment, I would argue, and I think most people would agree, that we had cyclically low unemployment, or overemployment, if you will, in 1999, as the economy was growing as it had for so long.
No question about it. Yeah, that was as close to full employment as I've seen in my career in say 1999. No question about it. Well, when I talk about cyclical and structural unemployment, folks, I'm talking about cyclical are the people who have been laid off and who are probably going to be able to go back to work in the job that they, in an assignment that they like what they had at one point in time, you know, relatively soon. The structural part, and this is something that I think is serious, and I don't think it's any politician's fault, although one party, you know, some parties try to blame the other parties for this, but the structural is something that's really happening almost worldwide, isn't it, where the jobs that some people know how to do don't exist anymore.
Well, you know, you're right. That, in other words, economic change involves constant, you know, destruction of certain jobs that ain't never coming back, and creation of new ones that have got a long way to go. This process is constant.
But it's the velocity is much greater today than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I'm not sure. Let me get a little empirical for a second. I've actually been sort of my curiosity has been piqued as to this question of, are we going through an accelerated period of change, structural change, and is the labor market reflecting that? What I did is I looked at the unemployment rate, and if you want, you can find unemployment rates not just for the country as a whole, but for different groups, so for professional people, for executives, for factory workers, and so on. And you don't see now, as you would expect, if there was an accelerated pace of structural change, you don't see a huge gap in these unemployment rates. In other words, you don't see far, far higher factory unemployment than you would, say, for professionals and technical workers. So it tells me that we clearly are having this process unfold now, but probably not at an unusually rapid pace.
Well, but the problem, it seems to me, Richard, is that those factory workers, you know, 25 years ago, when they were hired back, they went back to work at a factory. Today, those factories aren't here anymore.
Factory employment...
I'm sorry, Richard. Hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to let Richard finish his thought, and then I'm going to ask him about these deficits. Should we be worried about them, the cyclical and the structural deficits? Should we be worried about them? Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Richard DeKayser, Chief Economist with National City Bank. And Richard, I had to cut you off. Do you remember your thoughts as we went to the break? I know if you had something else you'd like to add to that.
Oh, that was years ago.
Okay. Well, let me then obviously you don't feel too excited about that. Let's move on. And I want to point out that the 2005 budget that the president is proposing is a record, but
yes,
and it's going to create a pretty good size deficit. But the 2004 deficit of $521 billion is 4.5% of the gross domestic product,
correct?
Which is not a record because the records were set in the 1980s. But so here's my question: that deficit does that concern you in terms of the overall economy? Is that $521 billion deficit for this year, does that concern you?
Well, I have to answer that in two parts. Does it concern me right now? Absolutely not. The economy of our size is perfectly capable of handling a deficit like that in any given year without there being any adverse outcomes in terms of, say, the government having to compete with the private sector to borrow money. What does concern me, however, is the longer-term outlook. When you start running deficits that are not 1 or 2 or 3 years when you need them, as we have in the past during the recession and the post-recession period of slow growth, but when you start running deficits as a matter of course, even when the economy is at the peak of its game, even when unemployment is low, even when profits are soaring, then you have a very serious problem. And the reason we should expect that to happen at this point is the government has basically a mountain of unfunded liabilities in the form of our Social Security system and our Medicaid system, which can only go up. If you look at the demographics, the aging of the population, and needs for health care and so forth, they're going to be there beyond 1, 2, 3, 5, even 10 years. And
those are the structural. Those are the structural issues, aren't they?
Exactly, exactly. Now, by every estimate, every reasonable estimate out there, we do in fact now have a deficit which is structural in nature, which is to say that it won't simply go away as the economy grows. And that is a problem. The reason it's a problem is because it means that the government is competing with the private sector for a limited pool of money. And the outcome is that, as supply and demand would imply, when you have more demand than relative to supply, the price goes up. And in this case, the price is interest rates. And if interest rates go up, well, that kind of cuts to the lifeblood of the economy's long-term existence.
That's the real potential danger, isn't it? That if inflation picks up, if interest rates spike over a period of time, that's when it really starts getting dangerous, doesn't it?
Well, it is. In fact, the Federal Reserve has thrown their hat in the circle on this one recently. I think last year they did some research, which estimated that a expected budget deficit, that is to say one that's going to persist in the future, of just 1% of GDP will raise long-term interest rates by a quarter percentage point.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're looking at 2 or 3% of GDP, as is probably realistic at this point, that means interest rates, all other things being equal, will be half to three quarters of a percentage point above what they otherwise would be. And that means on the margin, at least, businesses will forego certain investment opportunities. And the less you invest, the less capital you have, the less productivity will grow. And that, in the end, is the principal source of rising living standards.
We've got to figure out how to get these structural deficits down, which includes the entitlements, which seems to me that one of the only ways, Richard, is to privatize some element of these entitlements.
I absolutely agree. And let me put things. Actually, President Bush had what I thought was a fabulous idea when he was running for election in 2000, which was partial privatization of Social Security, which took a giant leap in that direction. The problem, and it would basically say that you can take 2 of the 7% of your money that you kick into the Social Security fund, and instead of doing that, invest it privately. The only problem was that since the Social Security is the so-called a pay-as-you-go system, that is, we who pay in now are supporting the retired folks today, that money not going in would create, again, an unfunded liability, and the ballpark guesstimate was that it was to the tune of about $1 trillion.
Right.
You can't
We got about 20 seconds.
You can't just exit without addressing those promises, or at least implicit promises, that have been made.
It's a serious problem that's getting bigger. And as the baby boomers age, it's going to become more and more of a problem. And it's something it's a reality we've all got to deal with. And Richard, I'm looking forward to getting you back again another day so we can talk about these issues another time. I appreciate your time today.
I'd be delighted to, Jim, anytime.
Thanks. Richard DeKayser, ladies and gentlemen, with National City Bank. We'll get him back again real soon. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.